Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. We wanted to end this hour with a discussion of what we all heard yesterday. About this time yesterday, we'd all finished hearing on WNYC the Supreme Court oral arguments in the case called Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization. That organization is the last clinic in the state of Mississippi that provides abortion services. The case centers on how much a state can limit the right to terminate a pregnancy. The Mississippi law in question bans abortions after 15 weeks, which contradicts the court's ruling on Roe versus Wade. The question blends the legalities of the Constitution, who determines autonomy, the definition of liberty came up. Mississippi Solicitor General Scott Stewart has asked the court to uphold Mississippi's law, which would negate Roe. And for the first time in the 48 years since that watershed decision, the composition of the court has Supreme Court watchers thinking they might do it. Joining me now to review the oral arguments from yesterday and what they mean for the future is Shefali Luthra, a reporter for the 19th, and she covers the intersection of gender and healthcare. Shefali, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, you can call in with your comments, your concerns, your questions in the wake of the oral arguments in the Mississippi abortion rights case yesterday. We're holding space for those who faced a choice. If that's you and you're up to it, give us a call. Share your thoughts. 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. Or you can tweet or DM us on Instagram at @allofitwnyc. So I want to get to the notion that Roe could be overturned. After the oral arguments ended, you put on your reporting cap, as one does, and talked to some legal experts. One of them, Catherine Kraschel from Yale, told you, prior to today's argument, I would have hypothesized that we might see Roe versus Wade incrementally gutted and possibly gone by 23 or 24. But after today's argument, I am more convinced that there are five justices poised to overturn Roe v. Wade. What did she see that convinced her of that?
Justice Brett Kavanaugh and Justice Amy Coney Barrett were really the two votes to watch yesterday, and there was a lot of speculation as to whether they might form some kind of coalition with John Roberts, who we know has been very concerned about the perceived legitimacy of the court. And Justice Roberts tried to float this, what could be framed as a compromise, in which the court upheld Mississippi's 15-week ban on abortion, but did not overrule Roe entirely. But what we saw was Kavanaugh and Barrett really had no interest that they expressed in this kind of compromise, and they really put themselves in a position of seeming quite open to overturning Roe v. Wade entirely. And with those kind of votes no longer in play for Roberts, the math just doesn't really work for anything other than a full overturn of Roe v. Wade.
I'm sure that you've been talking to advocates and activists since yesterday's oral argument. What has pro-abortion rights activism looked like under the existing laws, meaning under Roe versus Wade and under Casey? And how would the strategies have to change if those precedents were overturned?
It's really complicated. And a couple of things to remember, right, are if Roe v. Wade is overturned, what will happen is that individual states will have the power to ban abortion. They could also erect laws that would maintain abortion rights. So what we expect to see, right, is lots of organizing on the state level to try and maintain state abortion protections, especially in states like Kansas, where lawmakers haven't fully gone either way yet. But what we're also going to see is a lot of activists are trying to establish different kinds of networks that may be a bit more underground and help folks access, in particular, medication, abortion, even if it is illegal in their state. And I think we have a really open future in terms of what self-managed abortion could look like, which, as we know, right, can be done safely, can also be dangerous.
Let's take some calls. Let's go to line four, Carol calling in from Putnam Valley. Carol, thank you very much for calling All of It.
Thank you for taking my call. Listening to the study relive my.
Oh, Carol, your phone line is. You know what, Carol?
I was one of the very fortunate people who survived it and didn't have any permanent challenge, permanent damage. And when I was much older, I ended up having a child very much by choice who I wanted so badly. I almost didn't have an amniocentesis. But.
Oh, Carol, your line unfortunately is not great. But we really appreciate you sharing your story of your choice that you made early on in your life. Let's go to Ruth calling in from Queens. Hi, Ruth. Thank you for calling All of It.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm speaking from the perspective of being in my 70s. When I was much younger, I actually had two abortions, and my experience was very much in alignment with the doctor who was talking about the research she had done. Some things have been coming to mind, some questions. One is, I don't recall exactly who it was or if it was more than one man, male legislator, who said that in Mississippi they would make sure that once they outlaw abortion, in effect, they will then make sure that men stop abusing women. And it occurred to me that perhaps they could be taken at their word and the suggestion be made that first they make sure that men stop abusing women and then they can vote on abortion.
Hmm. Ruth, thank you so much for calling in. We really appreciate your candor. I want to take one more call. May calling in from Montclair, New Jersey, on line 10. Hi, May. Thanks for calling All of It. What are your thoughts on the idea that Roe
versus
Wade?
Well, my thoughts are that rich people could always get abortions. They were taken care of. It was the poor people that had to use coat hangers and different things just to abort a baby. And I can't see this should be overturned.
May, thank you for calling in. My guest is Shafela Luthra. She's a healthcare reporter for the 19th. You know, one of our callers referred to the segment we had before, the doctor who did the Turnaway study, which is a comprehensive study about what access or not having access to abortion, the impact that has long-term on women's lives. And, you know, the idea of harm came up a lot yesterday. Who is harmed? How does harm come into play in these legal arguments?
It's a complicated question because, right, originally the Roe v. Wade ruling came from this right to privacy, but later on in Casey, right, we came to this understanding as well that abortion rights were critical for economic equality between men and women. And what we're hearing is an argument from the state of Mississippi that now we've come so far as a society that if you are a mother, that is not a barrier to economic advancement. And the argument there is, well, then who needs abortion rights? As the Turnaway study and many other great works of research have shown, that's not really true. The evidence doesn't bear that out. And what we are actually going to see, of course, right, is the people who face the greatest barriers towards abortion are often the ones where the deck is already in some way stacked, right? You already are of lower income. You may not have to work multiple minimum wage jobs. You may not have other benefits. You may already have kids. And the liberals on the court really tried to emphasize that this economic inequality is a major constitutional issue, but it's not clear that that is going to find much of an audience in the conservative wing.
Let's go to line 2. Judy is called in from Essex County, New Jersey. Hi, Judy. We really appreciate you calling in.
Hi, Allison. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling in. You're on the air. You're on the air, Judy.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're on the air. Go for
it. Oh, hi. I had an abortion 35 years ago on the cusp of graduating from college. And the screener was asking me, you know, I'm not sure what he asked me, but exactly. But I think what's going on now and what has always been going on as far as abortion is it's all about control.
Hmm. Thank you so much for calling in. Let's go to Rochelle, line 8. Hi, Rochelle. I've got about a minute for you. You're on the air.
Okay. I'll just throw in 2 quick points. I, too, as a young person, had an abortion, and I can't imagine the time being shortened because the denial and loss and confusion of those few weeks that you have to make this choice are so tricky that if it were any shorter, it'd be terrifying. But my second point was, I listened to the arguments yesterday, and when it was over, I was like, yay. The women who were defending women's rights were brilliant. They answered every question. They knew what they were talking about. And the fellow from Mississippi did all this and ahhing and couldn't answer questions. And I thought, if this was a court case on TV, it was very clear who won this case. So I kind of felt like, oh, wow. So we really do the Supreme Court justices not really require the defending of this case by those people? Hmm. It just, are we really relying on them having their made up their mind? That's not what I thought courts did.
Rochelle, thank you for calling in. Shefali, you got about a minute left. What's next legally?
What's next? We don't get a decision on this case probably until June or July, because this is one of the high profile cases and usually decisions come right at the end of the term. We also have, we're waiting on a decision from the court's oral arguments in the mm-hmm. Texas 6-week abortion ban, right, which has effectively ended access to abortion in the state already. It's going to be a really big year for abortion. And depending on what comes in June or July, we will most likely see states pursuing more aggressive restrictions and potentially outright bans in the coming year.
Shefali Luthra is a reporter for The 19th. Thank you so much for sharing your reporting. And thanks so much to our callers for sharing their stories. This is All of It.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.